back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature. Today I have a fabulous new horror film, and yes, you do need to see it, because I really liked it. They Wait in the Dark is the name of the film. The director, Patrick Ray, is here. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, how did you become attached to the project? Why don't we start right there?
Oh, wow. So that's kind of an interesting process. So 2020, obviously, a lot of us were not working. So I had a lot of time to write. And my friend Megan Flynn approached me. She was actually the producer of the film. And she was like, I want to make a feature in the summer of 2021. And she kind of discussed the parameters of like what, you know, we could afford. So I told her I always wanted to write a haunted house movie. I had done other kinds of horror movies, but never a haunted house film. But I knew that we were going to have to make it so that it was pretty self-contained. It couldn't be something that, you know, obviously it couldn't be Poltergeist. So I wanted to make something that was a little bit more, had a different vantage point than most haunted house movies. Because one of the things I always notice when I'm watching a haunted house film is it's like, well, the first time a chair moves, I'd be out of the house. You know, if I saw something floating in my house, I would move out immediately. So I was like, I got to have a reason why. Our lead character, who's on the run with her adopted son, why they don't leave this house that they're in. So I wrote this story of basically she's hiding from her ex-lover. And so that's the reason. So she's kind of like trapped between a supernatural threat and a very real threat. And so I felt like that would be interesting, kind of an interesting dilemma for the character to be in. And obviously that would be more interesting to the audience too, because everything has been done in some fashion with a haunted house movie. So I wanted to try something a little different.
I will say you achieved that brilliantly. Like, I have not seen this concept before and I quite liked it, but I can't go any further because I'll ruin things. let's go over some easy stuff just to start warming you up.
Sure, sure.
Like, you have a lot of locations. You say you have no money, but I find your film as a world, you really built this world from a convenience store, which I do want to go, how you got that location. I want to go over the motel location, the restaurant. Sure. Is this all the same place? And I want to discuss the house because I'm convinced it's two locations.
Oh, interesting. So we shot a lot of the film in Kansas City, Missouri, and Topeka, Kansas, which is about an hour and 15 minutes apart. I live in Kansas City, Missouri. Most of the crew lives in Kansas City. But so we shot the diner scene. There's a really cute diner location. We shot that about 10 minutes from where I live. So that was really ideal. I literally just
perfect.
I kind of just drove around and I was looking for a diner. A lot of diners in Kansas City had been used, but they were not open to film shoots during the pandemic. So I had to find one that hadn't been used before. And then the gas station was actually between Topeka and Kansas City, in the town of Leavenworth, which is famous for having the Leavenworth prison. So I got the gas station, but of course, because we were working with, you know, a smaller budget, I couldn't actually close the gas station. So, you know, it's one of those things where you have to think about the fact that you're filming in a place that's actually still open and working around real customers. And we lucked out. It wasn't a super, super busy evening when we were filming. Where the challenge began is when we were filming that scene outside with Judith being harassed by the two truck drivers. Everyone in town heard that we were filming a movie. So they all started pulling up to the pumps. So it became like they were like filming us with their phones or taking pictures. Where it was fine is when we were filming towards the gas station, you couldn't see all the cars. But when I would flip the camera around on Judith, you could see people watching in the background. So I had to tell them, if you could just stay in your car until we're done. And I was also like, please don't leave the pump, because if I do a different take, there might be a different car all of a sudden behind her and it won't make any sense. So, you know, I told them to just stay put. And we shot pretty quickly at that location. When you're working with a real location, you don't want to be there too long. And then the main house was filmed in Topeka, outside of Topeka, on a farm. And it was all one location, believe it or not.
Hold that basement is that house basement.
Yes, absolutely.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and wow. The basement in the movie, you know, it was funny because the way I got that house, I had a friend who own that property. I had shot in her house in like 2011 on a different feature film. And she lives in she lived in Leawood, Kansas, which is a more suburban area. And so we left a good impression when we filmed there like over a decade ago. So she was always kind of saying, hey, I've got this property that's been basically abandoned since 2009, 2010. And I'm trying to sell it, but I would love for you to make a movie there. So like finally the opportunity came. And so we filmed there and it was great. But like a lot of what you see on camera in that house was really there. It looks like that. So we didn't have to do, in fact, we had to make it look a little cleaner because it was kind of unsanitary in places to the point where I'm like, okay, we got to keep it looking abandoned, but we also have to keep it safe for the crew, you know? And so, in the basement, it was funny because, you know, in those scenes as the director, I'm hiding behind like the air conditioner in those shots. And there was a snake skin that was like that long in the basement. And I kept thinking to myself, where's the snake? Cause the snake skin was there, but there was no snake. So those are the kind of things, you know, we, you know, believe it or not, those scenes were actually pretty easy to film. Obviously there was a scene outside where they're doing target shooting. That was probably one of the more stressful scenes because of the content, because we have an 8-year-old involved in the scene. And this was 3 months before Rust happened. So we were very, very careful, took a lot of precautions. We had, you know, an armorer on set and we were filming blanks, using blanks and stuff like that. But still, you have to be extra, extra careful. And it was 102 degrees in the shade that day. So, you know, it wasn't a very comfortable day filming. And that's one thing about Missouri and Kansas is we shot in June and it can get really, really hot. So, you know, that's just one of those things you just have to kind of prepare yourself for. And, you know, the house was warm because we had to make sure the air conditioning was working half the time. So, yeah.
Okay. When you do a lot of your shooting, I find at the beginning of the film, you do a lot of long shots.
Right.
The gas station is almost like a long shot, most of it. The pre-gas station, I find long shot. And as the film does close in, I find you close in too. Is that your plan?
Yes.
To make me feel claustrophobic? Because by the end, I'm like,
yeah.
I got to say, your pacing was great. It all worked for me. But I really was getting claustrophobic by the end myself, going, okay, there has to be a break point here because I need it.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of our idea, was to kind of have give the movie some scope at the beginning and then have it slowly tighten in. As she's kind of being tight, you know, the ghostly supernatural thing going on in the house is there. And then Judith, the character, is closing in on her. So you have to feel like she's got nowhere to go. And so, yeah, the shot framing gets tighter. The editing gets faster. You know, but we did want to start out with a little bit more. I had some aerials of some beautiful aerials of Kansas and Missouri that we sprinkled in. But that was all intentional. I did all the editing myself as well, which helps because when you're filming a movie, you know, especially an indie film, it's easier for me to communicate to myself if I'm the editor. So I know what takes that I felt were the best takes. So when I'm editing, I can kind of move a little faster and get it put together faster. So
you had the drone shots ahead of time to edit in? Because, I mean, obviously the drone shots you use.
I got those later. We filmed 12 days. Was the whole shoot was 12 days. And then we took one day out to get, like, drone footage. And then we got some, like, just some small town footage to kind of sprinkle in throughout. We had a couple car shots that we needed to get and stuff. But generally everything was shot in those 12 days.
I want to say your actors seem very real to me. Like, this seems like a real situation. I mean, sometimes you watch films, they're acting. I'm not saying your actors aren't acting, but they have a real look. I really felt they were a couple. I really felt this kid could have been adopted.
Right.
You know,
like,
all this stuff worked for me. Is that what your plan was? Did you, like, select them individually, or did you come on and they were there?
I had worked with Sarah McGuire, who plays the lead, Amy. I worked with her on a number of projects. She's in a feature film I did called I Am Lisa, which was a few years ago. And then she was in a couple short films that I did. I wrote this script specifically for her, knowing that it was because I mean, we've just worked together so much. And I knew she could carry a feature film. So I wrote it specifically for her, which actually took a little bit of pressure off because I'm like, okay, I know she's going to do a great job. You know what I'm saying? And then the actress who plays Judith, Lori Winkle, the two of them have known each other for a long time. So everybody, you know, was basically based out of Kansas City. Lori was originally based out of this area, but then moved to Atlanta. So when I finally cast her, she had to, you know, fly back in. And so, yeah, I think everybody's like, well, they felt like they were a real couple and they barely have any screen time together. Well, a lot of that is because they really know each other. Like they actually, you know, have been friends. So that rapport had already been there. Then the character, you know, the one who's the best friend, played by Paige Maria, she was kind of the surprise because I had worked through a lot of different casting agencies here in Kansas City and or talent agencies, and I got her audition from a company called Moxie, and it was just a wonderful surprise because I didn't know who she was, and it was just nice. I was like, all right, this is fantastic, and so she you know, fit the character perfect, and. And then finally, you know, she played Jenny, and then we had Patrick as Adrian, and Patrick is the grandson of another actor that I had worked with in the past. So I had heard about him. He had been doing some stage here in Kansas City. So, he just fit perfect. He was one of the only kids to audition for that role. I just knew he was right for it from the get-go, right? When I saw, his audition, it was perfect. And then obviously at that point we were shooting in June of 2021. So it was kind of hard for me to get everybody together to do a table read in person because, you know, the pandemic was still going on. So we did like a big table read via Zoom with everybody there. And I got to hear the script out loud and everybody kind of got to know each other over that. I mean, everybody knew each other anyway, but the great thing is I've worked with a lot of the same crew for over a decade, actually longer than that. And so we were able to basically, you know, it's a shorthand, you know, a lot of us just kind of know what finish each other's sentences when we're working on a film, which allows us to move faster because we had to move pretty quickly to get this movie shot in 12 days. And there was a lot of dialogue, a lot of, you know, actor moments that needed to hit correctly. But that's what the beauty of casting. I got the right actors. And so it took a little bit of the pressure off.
Okay. I got to say, you have a wonderful use of music. I do find your music, I've not seen in a long time in an indie film, the use of music to set tone. I'm saying it's not there in movies, but you, I like the way you speed it up at certain times. You know exactly where I'm going with this.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, Ben Benefield did the score, and I'd worked with him again on several short films. And so he was fantastic. And basically nailed it right away. He understood the tone of the movie. He'd saw the full film and knew exactly what he was planning on doing. And he also handled all the sound design. So basically he was doing double duty. So he was able to kind of work on the score as he was doing the sound design and mix it properly so that sound effects didn't overpower the music didn't overpower the sound effects and, you know, the dialogue and all that. So, that was really fantastic. I mean, normally that's like six people's jobs right there, but he was a one man band for that. So
now, do you find when you have somebody you can work with, you just go here you go, and they give you back what you need? Because it sounds like your crew and you work.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there is definitely a sense of, you know, since we've been working together, my director of photography, I think the first project he and I ever filmed together was in 2006. So we've been working together quite a bit. So generally the way he and I work is we walk the locations and he creates basically a lighting grid of what those rooms are going to require lighting wise. I go over all the angles. I usually have a shot list or storyboards to kind of go over where I'm going to have the actors, where everything's going to be shot from. And so then he kind of figures out where the lighting is going to be each day. The good thing about having this particular location, because I think we shot 8 days at the house and then 4 days everywhere else. I think that's what it was. We could leave our gear at that house. So it wasn't like we were filming and then having to pull all the lights down and start over the next day. So that actually made the process faster because we weren't having to relight everything the next day. We could kind of think ahead and figure out what we were shooting, what room we were going to be the next day, and all that kind of stuff. So that helped. That helped a lot.
Okay, I'm going to ask some questions that may be a little more different. I'm going to ask, did you mess up the house with the cans and the graffiti, or is that already there?
Oh, no, that we did add. Those are some things, the graffiti we added, and then the cans we brought in. But, like, all that stuff that she's cleaning off the table and the scene, doing all that was already there. So we were like, okay, if we're going to clean this kitchen table or this dining room table, let's film it because it's part of the movie. So we're like, all right. So we actually did it on camera. What was kind of funny was that the house was being renovated as we were filming. So the kitchen, the scene where, without giving anything away, she goes and runs for a rifle in the kitchen. That's the way the kitchen looked. But then by the time we were done filming, it had new cabinets. It was repainted. So I was like kind of, The renovators were in there at like from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then we were doing overnights. So we were filming from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. So we were kind of following each other. And I'm like, all right, we got to get the kitchen shot before the guys come in with the new cabinets. Otherwise, nothing's going to match. So that was an interesting challenge, but it worked out. It worked out just fine.
Okay. You have photos on the wall at one point. Did you add those photos or are they original with the house?
Which room? Is it the living room?
I think it was the living room
photo,
the hallway.
The family photos, the family photos we definitely added. Yeah, we definitely used, like Megan Flynn, who's the producer of the film, is the mom in the flashback.
Oh, okay. So, then I know who she is.
Those were photos were taken off site. We did those like a couple weeks in advance to get those photos made. Same thing with the photo of Judith and Amy and Adrian as a younger kid. That was all put together maybe a couple days before. We had to kind of – so Judith, the actress who played Judith, Lori, she was on set of the Father of the Bride movie that they just did with Andy Garcia. So she was doing one day on that and then had to fly in the next morning to do our movie. So we had to kind of get those photos taken when we had the opportunity because she hadn't been in town for them. So those are kind of things that when you're making a movie, you're like, okay, they have a photo of each other as a couple. When are we going to grab that photo? So those are the little things you have to think about.
Okay. The look of your lead actor, I wasn't sure if she had a makeup foundation or that was just a general strip away look of her. I was trying to figure that out.
Well, yeah. She might've been wearing a little bit of makeup, but she generally was, we wanted it to look as natural as possible.
Like, well, that's what it looked like to me, but the lighting, it's hard to tell. I'm like, I know you're lighting her. So I'm like, I'm seeing light hit her. So I'm like, I can't tell.
Well, I mean, generally what you do is you try to take the shine away, so that the actors aren't shiny on camera. But we tried to give everybody a natural look. For me, like in this particular situation, people having them, I think Judith could wear makeup because she's kind of a little bit more, she's in pursuit. She needs to look a little bit more like she hasn't been on the run. And so it really worked for the Amy character. That was actually the way the script was written. That's exactly how it was supposed to be.
Okay. I always have to ask, working with children, because I know it's always fun. I like him as an actor.
He was great. I was worried. I'll be honest with you. I was worried because I knew that we were going to have to do overnight. So there was a little bit of like, oh my gosh, what are we going to, And it turns out he was, by 3 a.m, he was still running circles around us. We were all like, but he was popping Coca-Cola, just popping cans of Coca-Cola and drinking it while we were, still trying to get lights and shots set up and stuff. But he was a trooper. He never complained once. And he was just a lot of fun to work with.
Okay, I got a couple of sound effects I want to add. Were the gunshots sound effects added? Could they sound to me like they were added to the film?
Yeah. Because the reason is that there's almost no sound from a blank. So you have to add those sound effects later. Yeah.
And a drinking scene, when she's drinking water, it sounded like there was a sound effect added too.
Yeah, that part I'm not sure. Because I remember what exactly we added. Maybe he went in and added a different sound effect for that. But generally, a lot of that stuff was recorded on set. I mean, there's always challenges, especially in Kansas, where you're like, oh, look, a plane is flying overhead. Those kind of sound effects you don't expect. But generally speaking, it was all recorded live. I mean, you always have certain lines that you have to re-loop later. And Ben actually handled all that too. So we had to bring the actors in and reloop a few lines, not that many. So,
okay. I want to talk about your lighting in the bathtub shot.
Okay.
I really liked it. Now, was that difficult to set up? I thought it was interesting, not really. The lighting.
It was minimal. I mean, we didn't do a ton of lighting there. We did do some lighting, but it wasn't a ton, mainly because we just didn't have room. We had to get the dolly in there, which is where, you know, we put the camera on that. We can slide towards her. And we had to fit the actors in there. We had to fit the audio guy in there. And so there was lighting. But, you know, the problem with a lot of that is when you're in a very small location, people cast shadows because they're all very close to each other. So we had to be very, very mindful of where we put the lights and stuff like that. But, you know, some of that is also the color correction, which we hired a guy named Taylor Jones, who's a fantastic color correction guy and colorist. and he also did the movie The Stylist. I don't know if you've seen that film. He did the color for that. That was also shot here in Kansas City. So, yeah, he's fantastic, and he really took everything up to the next level because I wanted to do minimal lighting. One thing that I didn't want to do, and what I kept stressing from the very beginning with this film was I wanted it to look dark in places. I think sometimes where horror movies aren't scary is that they overlight a scene, and it just looks too bright, you know? So I wanted the movie to actually feel like there was darkness in certain parts of the rooms and stuff.
Now, I finally see that the lighting at the dinner at night, I would say, I have a note about that saying you've changed your lighting again for that scene.
Yeah, yeah. I think we tried to make every one of them look a little different. I mean, some of it was shot different days. We had to go back to the table and stuff like that. But generally, you know, we shot some of the like, for instance, the flashback where Amy as a child is sitting at the kitchen or the dining room table, and her mom is standing behind her. All of that was shot a specific way to look like, first of all, like it was a cleaner house. And actually the lighting was different to make it give it kind of a flashback look, as opposed to what you see when she's eating dinner with Adrian later. So,
okay, we're getting to the end. I noticed you have a heavy makeup shot near the end.
Yeah. So
how long did that take?
Without giving anything away, obviously there's a ghost in the film. We can give that away, but there's
okay. See, I wasn't even giving that away.
Oh yeah, there's a ghost. I mean, I have no problems. I have no problems discussing that. Yeah, that was a lot of work. I mean, obviously we had to schedule things very carefully on those days because I was filming a lot of the finale in order. So, and the way the finale is set up, obviously there's some a little bit of action involved between the two characters, the protagonist and antagonist. And so while we were working on that, I had the makeup artist. He basically brought extra people that day because we had to put the person in heavy duty makeup, and it took many, many hours. And again, without giving anything away, the character has contacts that, you know, that they had to wear. And they were blind. Like, we had to walk them to set, you know, because they couldn't see anything with
those are the questions. Yeah, because yeah. It's an elaborate makeup job.
Right, it really is. It really is. And I didn't want to show that early on in the movie because I wanted it to be special for the end. I think sometimes if you show things too early, it loses some of its momentum. It loses some of its impact. So I was trying to, like, be very careful with not giving away too much early on, you know, and the way the film is structured, there are some surprises that I didn't want to, like, give it, you know, you're like, okay, so what point of the movie do I give away this? And at what point in the movie do I give away this without it being too early or too late, you know? And so it all had to be timed pretty carefully. So.
Okay. And my last point on the film, it's very dark as the story winds up. Yeah. Is that your plan? Like, yes. This thing is dark.
Yes.
I don't want anybody to think it's got a nice, happy. No, no, it's dark.
I'm definitely, like, it's funny because I think my next horror film I'm working on right now, which I'm raising the money for, has a little bit more comedy.
Thank you.
On the other hand,
Thank you.
Yeah, no, and I wanted this one to be heavy. And, you know, I wrote it November of 2020, so I think everybody kind of is feeling. There was a lot of heaviness going on, I think, around the planet. So I feel like I was watching a lot of news while I was writing it, you know, and And I wanted to touch on a lot of things. I mean, the movie really is about the cycle of abuse and breaking the cycle of abuse. That was kind of the theme of the movie. And then I kind of just made everything work around that. And then kind of, I basically built the haunted house movie around that idea. So, I think it works. I mean, it seems like the movie was very, very low budget, but it seems to be, it's doing well right now. It's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm just like, okay, please stay that high. But, and it seems to be doing well and people are talking about it. So I want that to continue.
Okay. I can't discuss any more of the movie. So I got to move on to fun questions. I think I covered everything though.
Okay. Great. Great.
Okay. Chad, first time on the show, I have to ask you your favorite film.
Believe it or not, it's Raiders of the Lost Ark, probably. I mean, I saw that when I was like really, really young, probably
me too.
Two or three, you know? And so,
okay, a little older.
Yeah. So, that one probably was the most influential besides Star Wars. Everybody expects me to say a horror movie. And obviously that all came later, you know, as a kid, I was, you know, a kid in the '80s. And so I was told not to watch, you know, Freddy Krueger and Friday the 13th, but I did anyway, because I had access to cable. But I would say that Raiders probably had the biggest influence, and then probably Big Trouble in Little China as a close second.
Okay, because you're wearing a Friday the 13th shirt, says Cap, yes. Crystal Lake.
Yes.
I have to ask you what your favorite Jason movie is.
Out of the whole series?
Absolutely.
Oh, man. It's so funny because it's like I go back and forth because the one that I hold with the most, fond memories is the fifth one, only because it was the first one I ever saw. And it was,
oh, that is my favorite one. So I'm totally on board with
it. It was funny because I remember as a kid, I probably was 7 or 8 years old and it was on Cinemax and I watched it through because we didn't have Cinemax. So I watched it through the scan line. So it was doing that. And I just was, you know, it was one of those things where I had to dial and, you know, I was trying to avoid getting caught by my parents. So for that reason, that's the one I've always gravitated towards. But I think maybe the second one, too. I don't know. I like the second one.
Second one's excellent, too.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. It's really easy. Your favorite killer?
Oh, Jason, easily.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah, easily. If you can see on this side of my computer, it's all like horror movie stuff. It's a lot of Michael Myers and Freddy and Jason stuff. Mixed up with like Star Wars and all that stuff. But, I would always say Jason's my favorite and, you know, Michael Myers is a close second. So
tell everybody where they can find your film
right now. They Wait in the Dark is available on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Redbox on demand, Apple TV, Vudu. Trying to think where everywhere else. It's on like DirecTV and Spectrum as well. And so it's not on like one of the horror streaming services yet. Generally, when the distributor puts the movie out, they put it out on all that paid VOD first. So
thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you.